Hey everybody, Shelley Hoffman here, and I am with County Executive Ryan McMahon, and he's wearing his Bevo colors today. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. And this was intentional, by the way.
Was it?
Yes.
Well, as I was telling you downstairs, breaking up, my entire podcast room is red and black, if I can help it. So you're blending right in with me and the podcast and Baldwinsville, which is my favorite place.
Yeah, well, big shout out to my good friend, Athletic Director Chris Campolita. You know, we grew up together, and he runs a great athletic program here in a great school district and a great community. The village looks fantastic.
It does. They took down the fountain. I don't know if you noticed a few months ago, and they just put this amazing compass. So before you leave, if you walk over to the square, you'll see the newest project here in Mayville.
Yeah, let's check it out.
So I asked you today to come and just give us an update a little bit about Micron. I know, you know, from the real estate standpoint, you do an update with us realtors quite often, right? I was at a real estate conference, I want to say 2 weeks ago, and there was a Micron representative that came. He was excited to get an office now in downtown Syracuse. The sign went up. But what would you say the most newest development with Micron would be?
Yeah, there's a lot of information, and there, because of the nature of the project and it being literally the largest in the country, there's different media reports and different things. So where we stand today is that the final environmental impact statement was adopted by the county IDA last week, and the benefit package, the local incentive package, was also adopted. And this is critical because that environmental review, once complete, triggers the 30-day record of decision. And that is what the federal government, the Department of Commerce, has to make all their determinations so that Micron can get their permits for tree clearing. And so the first phase of construction with Micron has procured Gilbain, a large company that's done big projects across the world, but here locally, they actually built the amphitheater.
Oh, cool.
And they're going to be clearing the site, getting the site ready for a foundation pour next year. There's going to be a rail spur that's going to be built that's going to allow for all of the fill-in materials to come by rail instead of truck, which is important. And this doesn't sound like a lot, but that's about $1 billion. So to give you perspective, at no time in our community's history has there been a $1 billion investment made by the private sector. So just clearing a site, getting the site ready, grubbing the site, is the largest investment from the private sector in our county's history. So that just shows the scale. So a couple things, right? In that final environmental impact statement, there was a schedule shift. The schedule shift did not shift construction. All it did was provide flexibility in the out years because the company believes that they cannot build a fab in 2 years.
Okay.
And so, those were the original dates in the DEIS. And why do they believe that? It's because they're building one in Idaho right now, and it's taking over 3 years. Okay. So I think from a, you know, is that disappointing that, you know, it's not going to be operational in 28, 29. Yes, but it wasn't realistic either. Not one of these projects in the semiconductor space in the United States has been able to hit a 2-year deadline. That's all 3 or 4 years. If you look at TSMC in Arizona, if you look at Samsung in Texas, and certainly Micron. And so that doesn't mean that, you know, thousands of construction workers won't be working. And that doesn't mean that supply chain companies won't be starting to build their own projects, and other companies and other investments won't be happening, because they will. But from a standpoint, even though in the environmental review, it had like a 2030 and a 2030 operational, 2033 for the second fab, those are arbitrary dates that essentially line up with their benefits they're going to receive from the CHIPS and Science grant. Those are when they have to have those fabs built to get that money. That doesn't mean it won't be faster. And quite frankly, we didn't even believe that it was necessary to put those dates, those revised dates, in the environmental review, because the construction starts the same. And so there really wasn't a change. You know, we announced this project in 2022. There's been lots of changes during it. As long as construction's starting, we didn't think it was even necessary. The company wanted to do that because they were scared of potential litigation. And so that's how it got there.
I do think sometimes you need to have dates so people have something to look forward to or something to at least talk about. The one thing that if you could clarify, only because you're talking to people that some people have a complete understanding of what you're doing and other people are, you know, really like need it broken down a little bit more. So traffic obviously is a huge concern. And when you said they're doing the rails to alleviate some of the trucks coming in, what is that going to look like?
Yeah. So the rail spur will be built by March. If you think about this, if we didn't do that, you want to talk about an environmental impact. You would have a truck per minute every minute of the day going there, right? So you couldn't, that's not acceptable, right? You can't do that. So you got to build the rail spur as a mitigation. And that environmental review, like that answers the questions, right? It studies all the impacts, good, bad, indifferent. And then it needs to have a mitigation plan for the negative impacts, right? So for traffic, for example, there's a rail spur being built to help. There's going to be enhancements to Route 31, Route 11, a new exit off of Sneller Road for 81 to help disperse traffic, right? You're talking about $600 million of improvements to help support this project. But it also helps improve Clay and Cicero today. Yeah. Those are challenges today. And without Micron, they're probably not going to get fixed, maybe even in our lifetime, right? So so that's good news, right? Related to, you know, different wetland mitigations. They're building over double the new wetlands, different endangered species. We might have found one Indiana bat on the site. It's inconclusive. We'll continue our DNA testing to figure that out. But we still got it because it exists in Adai County. They have to go do things for endangered habitat like that. So there's all these things that they're doing and spending lots of money. I mean, this review has been hundreds of millions of dollars for the company.
Yeah.
And so I think that should make people feel pretty good that they're paying all this money. And
I will think, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, and I apologize. I'll put it in the post later. But he said he's from here, and even his mom gives him grief. He's working for Micron. His mom's like, "Are you sure they're coming?" He's like, "My mom won't believe until there's a shovel in the ground that Micron is coming." But there's been a lot of things in place. Just people can't visually see it happening, right? Well,
they got their name on a building downtown, right? They got about 40 employees working every day there. Those are things, right? So they've already, it's not that the company's not here. They are here.
Yeah.
That's new payroll into the community. And so, but yes, nobody wants a shovel in the ground more than me. It's been a long 3 years to get to where we are. That shovel, you know, helps drive everything else we've been working on, you know, with the supply chain companies and creating a cluster, right? I talk about the Central New York Semiconductor Cluster, and these companies want to see a shovel, right? Because the numbers we're talking about, even for the semiconductor industry, are so massive that there's even doubt from some of their vendors. And so the dates matter because the vendors then need to back in to figure out when they need to be operational. They all need to be operational before Micron. And so if you're a gas and chemical company that needs to build, you know, you got to be ready about 6 months before Micron. And so what does that mean for the schedule? And that means these companies got to make decisions in 26. And they probably got to start building by the end of 26. You know, to be ready for Micron. And for us on the site, we're going to have the site also related to readiness. We have two major wastewater projects, one expanding the Oak Orchard service area. So that will bring more capacity, not just for Micron, but Freight Brewing is over there, right? They don't have sewers. They're going to get sewers. All the other existing businesses in the existing service area, they're going to have the ability to do more now because we're creating all this capacity for the community. But the second piece is for Micron specifically and the industrial clients specifically, as we're building out industrial wastewater systems, and Micron will be the first user. And then as other industrial users come in, they will be users, and that's good for Micron. That's an incentive for Micron to bring in their companies with them, because that means that they will pay less. The more users Micron pays less, the taxpayer doesn't pay for that, right? There's only one user right now that will pay for all of that. So that's $1.5 billion of projects. So think about, from a construction workforce standpoint, you know, that's going to create about 1,000 jobs. And so you're going to have about 1,000 construction workers working on those projects, certainly the Micron project. And then all these other companies are going to start coming, and you'll see a lot of greenfield development. And you're going to see a lot of these, you know, national private equity firms and developers that I would say have been speed dating with us to get involved with like housing projects. They're going to get in, right? They're going to be in. So it's going to be a construction boom, quite frankly, like we've never seen.
So you kind of led into one of my other questions, which is, as you know, I'm in real estate. You're connected very well with the real estate community. What do you see as far as housing? I mean, we're already in a housing crisis, and I know you've talked to us in real estate about it, but as far as the community goes and people watching, you know, people are already upset about the lack of housing.
Yeah.
So what's going to be done about that?
So there, you're in kind of like a catch 22 a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Your builders are not going to go build on spec yet, which is kind of, we kind of got to inch them there, right? And get them there. That's just not what we've done in this community before. As you know, we're in a fast appreciating market, which is good news if you're selling your house. It's bad news if you want to sell your house and go buy another one. The only way to fix this is inventory. And so we've done a lot at the county level to incentivize all of the above housing, right? Market rate, multifamily, working, workforce housing, senior housing, mixed use, mixed income. But also right now we're really focused in on more single family development. And we have tools called OCHIP, which essentially gives you grants per unit, capped. We have changed our uniform tax exempt policy at the county IDA. So some of these multi-unit projects, we will give you a pilot now, which we never did, to help incentivize them to do things and work faster. We have a market rate pilot, which is kind of a modest 3-year pilot. So if you think about this, for example, because I think people get like, housing, why would you do this? We had a project, I'm not going to say where, because then the elected officials will get mad at me. But it's a $50 million project, multi-unit, and it's market rate. They buy the land, they're building up a property. They haven't rented a unit yet because it's not complete. And the town adjusted their assessment from where it started to basically at full assessment before they even had rents. So all of a sudden, this developer has about a $500,000 increase in their tax bill. Most developers can't shoulder that. Everybody thinks developers are rich, not unless they're doing a lot of deals, right? And so, and even if they are rich, they're good business people. If they're going to get treated that way, or before they even have a rent, you're increasing their assessment, they're never going to do business in that community again. And so we did a 3-year pilot, so that can't happen. Basically, it graduates you in, so that basically you're not being charged full assessment until you actually have rents to cash flow. And so then the other two pilots we have is, if you're going to include workforce housing in a project, we'll give you a pilot. And then senior housing. So when I say senior housing, I'm not talking about more assisted living facilities. I'm talking about vibrant senior communities that give seniors an alternative to owning the homes they're in and the maintenance and upkeep with that. And these are different communities that have been very successfully built in the Carolinas and in the Sun Belt and in Florida. And we need that here. And that's a way to create more inventory too for realtors like yourself to sell.
Well, I was going to say, I talked to Bob Wicks when he was the town supervisor in Lysander, and he was talking about that. It's not like we have Red Mill Inn here, if you remember, and they call it Red Mill Manor now. But people are staying in their homes longer because they don't really want to leave Central New York, you know, but where are they going to go? So instead they create first floor bedrooms, or they just make their house. So that was a problem even before the pandemic and Micron was coming. People were staying in their homes longer, and we weren't having the turnover like we were having before.
Yeah.
So the word pilot, I know what the word pilot means, but I've had people just in articles they read. Can you explain what a pilot actually is when you throw that out to people?
It's a payment in lieu of taxes. So to give you an example, say you have a piece of dirt and you're going to go build a multifamily or mixed use property like the building we're in today. Your risk to be able to get financing is that it's likely hard for you to be able to cash flow any of that at full assessment right away. You're going from maybe a $200,000 valuation to a $20 million valuation. So for you to get your loan and cash flow that, it's probably unlikely. So what this tool does is it essentially allows for the development to happen. The municipality never gets less taxes. And then what it gradually increases your assessment to full assessment. So you have time to make the asset actually start to cash flow so that you can not lose money on a deal and you can pay your covenants to the banks. And so what people suggest is like, you're given a pilot, this is all money that should be going to the schools or the town or the county. The reality is it's a but-for project. But for those benefits, the project doesn't happen. And, in most cases, this is new money. Again, that piece of dirt was paying some taxes, right? You're still paying those taxes.
That's true.
You're getting the development, you're getting the jobs, and you're getting new revenue. And so I think that's kind of, what the school districts don't like is that pilot payment that goes to the schools actually goes to the school taxpayer. So it actually, the school taxpayer, it allows you to offset your taxes. It doesn't go to their operating budget. But what school districts can do is they set a tax levy. If you know you have $1 million of pilot payments coming in to the taxpayer, you can move your levy up $1 million and it offsets it. So there's ways to address it. But I think it's good, quite frankly, that the pilot payments go to the school taxpayers because it offsets your school taxes.
Yeah. Well, I ask because the messenger here in Baldwinsville had an article and it was talking about the pilot and talking to people, they really didn't understand what it was.
Yeah.
So thanks for explaining that a little bit better.
Yeah. It's really above four, right? So you never pay less than what you're already paying, but it gradually allows you to pay more instead of getting payment shock because you won't get a loan with that payment shock in many of these harder projects. And quite frankly, with a company like Micron, if you don't do it, you won't get the company. Because you're competing against other communities. And just so everyone knows, not that probably everybody doesn't know because we all pay them, but our property taxes are high compared to other states. Now we get better schools than other states, but they're high. So if you're a company looking at this and they're comparing us to Texas or North Carolina or Arizona, which in this project with Micron they did, that is a big red flag for their operating costs. So you got to compete. And if you want economic development jobs, you got to compete. Pilots are a necessary evil related to that.
I don't think people necessarily know how much negotiations, how many conversations, and how many different angles you have to look at, right? From the company standpoint and the county standpoint and schools to bring something like this together. So there's no doubt that it would take longer than everybody thinks it would, right? Because you have to just keep checking boxes and.
Yeah, this is so with Micron, this is the biggest project in the history of the country. Yeah. And so, and it's the most regulated project in the history of the country. It's gone through the state and local environmental review and a federal review. TSMC in Arizona did not have to do a federal review because there was no wetlands. It was the desert. So that's just the reality. And so when you think about that, when you think about the complexities of the infrastructure, all just like what I talked about locally, we had to be the most competitive. At the state level, they had to be at least on par with the closest state as far as cost. And then from the federal government to win this project for the country, you need to be cost competitive with Asia. Micron is the largest memory technology company in the world. It's the best one. It's an American company. But they have two fabs in the U.S. One is a research and development fab in Boise, and they're building another one in Boise. The other is a legacy fab in Manassas, Virginia. Most of their fabs are in Singapore and in Japan and in Taiwan. So when they're looking at where to make their next investment with their leading generation of technology, they got a board of directors. They have stock owners, right? Shareholders. They have to be able to say it makes sense to do it here in the U.S. So all those factors drive the selection process. Certainly, workforce development, community investments, those all help that drive that as well. But from an operational standpoint, those operation costs moving forward, when it comes to power, water, wastewater, taxes, Those are all part of the deal too. And so, it's complex. And I've learned a lot, and I think I've gotten pretty good at this now because of this company and what they put us through. And it's all going to be worth it soon. But the, the selection process is tough. You know, you learn a lot. You understand the types of investments the community needs to make to be able to attract these types of jobs and retain these types of jobs. And we're really well positioned to really create this cluster.
You had, I think it was like 3 years ago, maybe when I talked to you, maybe two, and we were talking about the aquarium at that time.
Yep.
Because in everything you talked about, one of the concerns they had was what are our people going to do? Right.
Absolutely.
And the fact that they still chose Central New York, I love it here. We've talked about that before, but it's all those different pieces, but it's nice that that quality of life for their employees also come into play.
It's huge. So if you think about it, retain, develop, and recruit talent. And what that sounds easy, but like it gets really complex when you're making it's over $100 billion, by the way. $100 billion is what it was in 2022. It's going to be much higher than that. So when you look at that, here's who we're competing against. Okay. Just think about just brand names. We're competing against Austin, Texas. Okay. We're competing against Phoenix, Arizona, essentially Raleigh, North Carolina, a site that sat between Chicago and Milwaukee, the two major metros in the Midwest. And then essentially a site in Michigan, which, we should beat that thing in Michigan. Right. So, but when you think about that, think about the arts and culture, the amenities that these communities have. You got to show that you're willing to invest in yourself as a community, right? Mm-hmm. And, a lot of people to date still question the decision to build an aquarium. We built it with budget surplus money, one-shot money. When I was hosting Sanjay, it was in 2022, it was January, early January. It was a beautiful day. The sun was actually out. The skies were blue. Only one problem, it was 3 degrees. And so from a guy from California coming in to try to what I thought was eliminate a community, right, from the list, he actually, after going over a lot of logistics and visiting Syracuse University, and we showed him the JMA Dome and let him play basketball for a little bit, downtown and Salt City Market, all these cool things. But he rightfully so, he challenged, what do you do here? What are my employees going to do? And of course I pivoted to the summer and the fall. And those are our strengths. But he was talking about, what do you do today? And, believe it or not everybody likes to ski or snowmobile, or ice skate or ice fish. People don't necessarily love the cold. I actually brought him the Inner Harbor and showed him plans for the aquarium. And he nodded his head with approval. And I think he liked it for two reasons. I don't really know if he likes aquariums or not, right? Assuming he might probably does. But I think he liked the fact that a community was willing to invest in itself in an area that sometimes is hard politically. And, this is the largest arts and culture investment in our community's history. And if you drive by the Inner Harbor, it looks pretty good. And I walked it on Friday, and just walking it, the scale of the project is what is special. This is not a small aquarium that isn't going to drive the types of traffic or economic partnerships that some of these smaller aquariums can. This is the scale of Baltimore. We looked at Boston, Chattanooga. The firm that helped design this helped design the Georgia Aquarium. So this is going to be a really special aquarium that will help, educate kids, give kids this unique experience. It's going to drive investment in that neighborhood. It already is. And then in addition to that, the tourism and, the cultural aspects, year-round use aspects, it's going to be one of those things that in 3 or 4 years, everybody's going to like.
And it's probably printed somewhere. I just don't know it off the top of my head. Is there an ETA for when the aquarium's going to open?
Yeah, it will be ready it will be complete in July. It will be open for the public certainly in August.
Okay. Yeah, I think I mentioned to you before, I'm from Pittsburgh. And when you're in schools in Pittsburgh, there's all these places downtown that you take field trips to, that you go and, mm-hmm. and have fun. So that was the first thing I thought of. And my kids are older. They're not going to take a field trip there, but their kids may, or sure. they can take their kids there. So I think it's kind of cool. But again, it's the background I came from, where you had, like, you know, different places to go like that in the city too. And Pittsburgh's not huge, but
Pittsburgh's a good town for us, though. You know, yeah. really strong eds and meds community that, a lot of legacy manufacturing, steel, mm-hmm. right? Like, we're kind of a really good comp as to what we can be. It's bigger than us, but that's a type of community we can you know, strive for. They got water, right? We got water.
Yeah. So is there any, I'm going to switch subjects for you, but before I do, is there anything else about Micron or the community that you want to mention?
No, I mean, we're ready, right? So, we've removed every, impediment to getting this project going. Mm-hmm. This past week we had kind of a showdown related to property the county owned with Mrs. King, and I'm happy that we came to an agreement with the King mm-hmm. family. You know, it was a tough situation for everybody. I can't really talk in too much detail about it because we agreed not to go through details of what the deal looks like, but certainly I think when you look at, nobody wanted to be there. We had to do the legal maneuvering we had to do to get a conversation going, because there was a long period of time where there was no conversation, and there was probably missed opportunities in that period of time. But the legal maneuvering we did got us to the table and got us a deal. Sure. Because there's no, one of the things people suggested was there was a way for that house to stay in Micron to happen. That was not possible. If you look at that site, once the trees are cut and cleared, and they all will be, they all have to be on March 31st, the natural way the water would flow on that site is right to that house. That house essentially is going to be, and the land is going to be a huge man-made lake for the site. So there was no way to keep anyone in that home during the construction phase. It just wouldn't be safe. And so happy that we got to a deal with the King family and their children.
I'm not going to lie. There's a house, or no, it was a bar down in one of the Carolinas on the beach. And I'm envisioning all the condos around it, because that was the last man standing. Yeah. So there was a couple of times where I envisioned, you know, their home just being there until, you know, but obviously.
At the right time, we can talk about all the details, but we got very creative in ways to try to resolve the situation. At the end of the day, you know, got resolved, and the other thing, these things don't get resolved unless people agree, right? Everybody agreed to it and felt good about it. And litigation would have potentially killed the project. There's certain things that had to happen. And if these things extended out, the project was in peril.
Okay. Thanks for bringing that up. I was going to ask you, but I was waiting for the correct intro, just because that is top of mind for people. It was just in the news, you know, this week. Yep. But it kind of goes to where I want to pivot to, which is, and you said anything was game. So I'm going to ask you this. So you were not always in politics. You were in mortgage.
Yep.
So I have another theme other than community that I talk about a lot. And it's like the ever changing and evolving in who we become, like who we were and who we become. Right. So one of the questions I have for you is, what made you go into where you are now?
Yeah, I was always, before I was a part-time elected official, and you could have a career path. And so kind of real estate finance, that's mm-hmm. kind of where we were. I always knew, you know, politics is timing, right? You can a couple of weeks ago, there was a local election and some really good local officials lost their jobs because of national headwinds. Not because they weren't really good local elected officials. And if you had a rematch probably like 3 weeks later after that, and some people realize, wait, they lost, and they look, oh, I didn't even get out and vote. I think some of those local elected officials would have won a rematch. So I think the timing matters. And I was the county legislative chair in a position when the county executive, Joni Mahoney, decided to take a job. And it was certainly a job that I was interested in. And if it happened, she leaves, it's an appointment in the legislature. I'm the head of the legislature. I had the relationships. I got the job. if she doesn't leave, right, and runs for another term, I may not be positioned to end up getting the job. So there's all these things that happen with timing. But certainly, you know, as a kid, I got involved early because I was kind of good at it. I wasn't good at some subject matters, but history, government, like things like this, I was kind of good at it. So you get in it, and it's hard to, you know, study to get in college to go be in politics, but, you know, political science major, business minor, you know, so I kind of had that background and was always engaged in the community. And when the timing happened where this could all work, it worked out well, you know, but certainly there's been, you know, for everybody in this, you have different opportunities, but if it doesn't work for your personal life or, you know, from a bad year for your political team, you know, things don't work out a lot too, but this one's worked out.
So I guess that was the piece I didn't know, just that you had kind of started, because I talked to like Brian May and different people, and I don't know if he necessarily would ever want to level up, but if that's your background, it took you in it. You did take over at a time where you had the pandemic.
Yes.
Now you have Micron. So I am a firm believer that the right person at the right time kind of comes in. So I, for one, is thankful that you did step up and take that position. But I was just kind of curious how you pivoted into it. And if you had any, like, kind of, I don't want to use the word regrets, but if there was a different life path that you would have taken had it not worked out.
Yeah. You know, you think a lot, because what, to your point, when we, you know, we ended up getting elected in 2019, we were on the job for about a year, and then you immediately go into COVID, and man, that seems that when for myself and even probably my team, when you think back at that, you think it truly is like with PTSD, with what you went through and everything you gave 1,000% every day, you know, to kind of fight an unknown respiratory virus that many experts said would wipe out populations. And then once you understood ways to mitigate and manage, you were dealing with, you know, at times incoherent and incompetent state and federal governments that were, their policies were impacting the livelihoods of so many people, changing the livelihoods of kids for generations. We still see, I have children. I still see the impacts every day with my own kids related to COVID and the skill sets that they don't have, because of, you know, decisions that were made. And so, you know, the one thing that's a positive out of that experience is I understand pressure and what pressure really feels like. And even in situations like last week where you're dealing with a situation, with eminent domain hearings, that's pressure. That's a lot of pressure. People are sending you lots of nasty messages and whatnot, but I relate that experience back to COVID, what we dealt with. And I understand what real pressure is. I understand how to manage through that and how to respond to emergencies. And those are skill sets that you're thrown into the fire, you develop them, you use them, you strategize. And if it wasn't for the pandemic, we never would have came up with our recovery strategy and learning from the necessary reality that we need to repatriate manufacturing into the United States. We couldn't get equipment, we couldn't get biologics, we couldn't get materials in the free market. We were actually like, we were so desperate for ventilators. I cut deals with like shady people out of like Singapore to get ventilators here. And that, you know, the governor at the time was trying to take ventilators from us. And so I was hiding ventilators so that our hospitals would have them for Onondaga County residents. But like you learn all these things, and then that, you know, the reality of us needing to make things here again is what drove all of our strategy with investments for White Pine. And that's where Micron's going, right? So all these things kind of happen together. But now when you think about managing like all these massive infrastructure projects, we can do that. Like I managed through the COVID, right? Which was impossible. We had to do things that the communities haven't had to do. And so, you know, I think that prepares you well for whatever comes next in these jobs.
Now, well, I want to thank you, because again, I think people get caught up in how this, whatever's happening now affects me, and they forget all the stuff that's been happening and that kind of led up to this, right? Because I see it the same way. I see that what COVID and the pandemic did is just giving, it gave us tools it changed our way of thinking and made more things a little bit more centralized, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. And it's still, look, there's still work to do. I mean, one of the things we do that people, that's so funny because people are so busy, like the way you get information, it's hard to get your story out. But one of the things we've done during, right after COVID, and we still fund today, is we fund mental health clinics in all of our school districts. And, three-tiered support for kids, at various levels. That's county money that goes into schools every year. And it's been really successful in helping meet kids where they are. And that's something that we'll continue to do. And, you see it and you see the skill sets that, a lot of these kids graduating now, my son Jack's a senior. Uh-huh. And, I kind of, look at some of his skill sets and I'm like, geez, is it just Jack? Are they all that way? And I think they're all that way. We're real proud of Jack. He's a great kid. These kids were like in seventh and eighth grade during that, right? Yeah. And then, the kids behind are even younger. And then there's kids now that don't even, they're going into pre-K and kindergarten. They don't even know what.
They don't have a clue.
No clue, right?
Yeah. I had a 2020 grad. So Jordan was one of the non-grad, like drive past graduation. Yeah. And then Allie's 19. So it was definitely, it was a time, but I was thankful that I didn't have the elementary school, kids at that point. So, those were pretty much the questions I had and people that had asked me to ask you some questions. So if there's anything else you want to throw out, now would be your time,
I just think right now, like historic things are about to take place. We are in a position in the community where we've never been stronger. Mm-hmm. Like anything, there's going to be challenges that come up, and working with various levels of government is always challenging, and that's something that we part of our job as well. But from an economic standpoint of generating opportunity for young people and for adults who want to retransition into careers, and really people of all backgrounds, like that opportunity is here and it's now. And it's not just Micron. I mean, we've had historic investments over the last 5 years from JMA Wireless, TTM Technologies expansion over in DeWitt is almost complete. Upstate continues to invest in a huge way in the medical area, the Syracuse University. Other manufacturers like Blue Force and quantum computing manufacturing, Feldmeier, Ultra Dairy, they're all investing, right? And people should be proud of that because they're investing back here because of the belief that they can, make their products and do it with Onondaga County residents.
And we're seeing an impact in the schools too, between from STEM programs that are getting implemented. Mm-hmm. But I've also talked to some teachers and schools about entrepreneur programs, which my kids didn't have. Right. Entrepreneur, but they had business, but they didn't have entrepreneur. And it really is a different way of thinking when you're thinking about going into somebody else's business or creating your own. So I'm excited for the opportunities that are here.
And it's hitting everything. You talk about the schools, right? And all the STEM related disciplines that maybe we did, but now we have to do in a different way. All these colleges, what a great opportunity. Higher education had challenges. It still does.
Yeah.
But, Syracuse University really invests in my alma mater, Lemoyne, just opened up a physics program and a physics major to help generate these engineering minds that we're going to continue to need. So this Micron opportunity and this cluster that's being created gives opportunities for higher educational institutions locally to compete for kids that historically don't come here for that, right? We didn't have great engineering, disciplines here before. Now we have to have very good ones. And we're competing for, gives, Syracuse and Lemoyne and Cornell and RPI, RIT pathways to talk about Micron to go compete with kids that used to go to the Big Ten schools. So it's all good. Yeah. We got a lot of work to do, but we're going to get there.
We do. I'm excited to see it's 5 years, right? Like where are we at now? Where are we at in 5 years? Where are we at in 10 years? Because from what people tell me, if I was here 20 years ago, I wouldn't recognize Baldwinsville to where it is today. So there's always been growth in Central New York.
Yeah. You're right. You won it.
Well, thank you for coming today. I appreciate the information and taking the time because I'm sure you're crazy busy, but I think it's good for people to hear just a one-on-one conversation. We read in the news, Syracuse.com. Like I said, even the Messenger had stuff about Pilot. And people are like, what does that even mean? How does that impact me? So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.